she had, depending on how you think about things, she had kind of a sweetheart deal in a way, because she could live at camp any part of the year or all the year if she wanted to, with no rent. And, you know, and of course during the summer, gosh, we wanted her up there then. During the off months, she also was running the program that was still at the Buchanan Street Center. And so Kamini made the decision that that part of her job should be cut out, and that she would be camp director only for 6 months of the year, and during that time she could live at camp, but not the rest of the time. And that caused so much turmoil. At that time, what was it called? Camp America, I think, had counselors that came to camp during the summer came from all over Europe.
Right.
They were brought in. Most of them had little experience with blindness, but brought in a fantastic wealth of experience living in another country and other foods, and so, you know, kind of enriched the camp program, at least I thought so. And OJ was very supportive of that, and she was considered a hero among Camp America counselors, I mean those that had served, you know, during the summers. And when she was cut back to half time, it was devastating to her. And there was a revolt among the Camp America counselors, and talk of some kind of action, legal action, boycotting, bad press. It was, and Kamini didn't know what he tangled with. I could not dissuade him from making that decision. That was not a cut that I would have made by any means. OJ was an innovative, very dedicated, and very knowledgeable worker. She certainly had her limitations, but and you know, so maybe she had a bit of a sweetheart's deal with living at camp if she wanted to, but that was not a good move to have made, the committee made, and it really tore the agency up, and she wound up leaving, and I think there was a lawsuit, and I don't know how that all went out, but it was bad times, really, really bad times. That was a terrible mistake that he made. He simply didn't understand the love that people had, and the admiration that people had for OJ.
Understood. And there were other times the lighthouse was picketed and its board was picketed. Can you recall any of those?
When we had the workshop, an assistant that worked for me, during his lunch breaks, he would go up to the workshop, and, you know, I didn't care where he went at lunchtime, but he went up and sat with the workers up there and began to talk about unionizing the workshop. And that somehow got to an arbitration court. And so Kaywood and I had to go to an arbitration hearing with the National Labor Relations Board, and there was a lot of community interest in that. It turned out that the National Labor Relations Board did not support the workers' talk about unionizing, because clearly it was a sheltered environment. It wasn't the typical work environment that unions typically would be involved with. So there was a bit of a community flair about that. Later, after I left, and I don't know if this is what you're referring to, but after I left, there was a good bit of community reaction to the Lighthouse, and particularly to Khomeini. It was alleged that he used the Lighthouse credit card to buy shoes for himself and other things. Supposedly, he paid that back and just used the Lighthouse credit card because he had it in his wallet. But it got to the media. He also, I have no idea why he did this, but I was told that he would pull up in the Lighthouse. He had a car that was issued to him by the Lighthouse. Was pretty typical of directors of agencies at that time. And he would pull up in the white zone in front of the Lighthouse and leave his car there. The white zone where, you know, the bus was supposed to unload people. Why he did that, I have no idea. I mean, he was a smart enough guy not to do that. But all of those things came together, and there was articles in the Chronicle and Examiner about the Lighthouse. And again, I wasn't here at the time, but what I understand was that the community was really up in arms about the community, and a couple of others in the leadership of the Lighthouse had to go. Khomeini was one of those people that he formed a very tight circle of around him, two or three or four people. I was part of that some of the time, but I kind of cut myself out of it because I did not want to be part of a good old boy circle like that.
How would it work? In what ways would it be a good old boys circle?
It would be Khomeini and the account director. I don't know what his official title was, but he was head of the finance department, and a psychologist who was in the client services unit, and they would sit around and have a good old boys discussion, and again, I wasn't here, so but I could only when I pulled myself out of it, I just realized that was not what I'd come to the Lighthouse to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was probably more perception than what they actually did. But those things, the thing with OJ, the using the credit card to pay for personal things, parking the car the way he did, and the tight circle that he had around him, which was pretty impenetrable, got to the community. And they put enough pressure on him, the board let him go, or worked out some kind of termination with him. I don't know what the details mm-hmm. of that were. But this was at a time, too, when revenues were falling. At that time, this was late 80s, just before Anita Aaron came on board, there was less than a year's operating funds in the portfolio. that from about two times operating, two or three times when in the early to mid 80s. So it had really dropped considerably.
So is it mostly a story of sort of business failure and insularity, or is there a disconnect from the blind community aspect as well?
I think it's both. Kamini was not appreciated in the blind community. He never mistreated blind folks or anything like that. He was never outwardly patronizing to them, but the arrogance that he had, the kind of quiet arrogance, and the underneath that, the good old boy network that he really was believed in, I think, that became pretty well known in the community. And of course it didn't help that the director before him was let go very quickly. So it was, the organization was under suspicion, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. And then one prominent person we still talk about is Rose Resnick. She was still alive and kicking in the 1980s. Did you have much to do with her then? And what was her role in the Lighthouse in the 70s and 80s?
She didn't have much to do with the Lighthouse. She, of course, when she and the Lighthouse separated in the 50s, said, all right, thank you very much, and she started her own agency, the Resnick Center. Got a building and got a board and got fundraising and was providing, some services. I met with her a couple of times, while she was there. She and I got along fine. She was bitter about how the Lighthouse absorbed Janet Hill's camp, and she came to work for the Lighthouse, and then she was, I don't know what led to her leaving, whether it was being fired or she just felt offended. But as she and the director at that time, Wynn Rumsey, did not get along. Of course, that was known in the community, and there were a lot of people that were, because Rose had established Enchanted Hills, and people knew about Enchanted Hills and valued it so much, and they associated her with that. When she severed her relationship, or was severed with the Lighthouse, it didn't do the Lighthouse any good, that's for sure. When Rumsey continued as director for another few years after that, I think he died in 1964, and the new director, Wesley Rich, I don't remember if I ever met him. I don't think I did. I was a rehab counselor at that time, but I didn't have much to do with the Lighthouse because it wasn't an agency that it was not seen as an agency that to anybody in rehab that was worth paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
It was the workshop, and they had Enchanted Hills Camp. Two things. There would never be a blind counselor hired as long as Wes Rich was director, and the guide ropes took on a reputation of paternalism that unfairly so, I think, but because the guide ropes were, people used them or they didn't. Didn't have to, but you could.
So even in the 60s, there was that reputation of paternalism.
Yes.
Wow.
Very much so. And what caused Wes Rich to leave in 73, 74 when he did and caused Caywood to be hired, I don't know. but it was the board at that time, when I, the board that hired Kay Wood and the board that I knew when I worked here for a good bit of that time was quite good. They didn't know so much about blindness, but they had a lot of regard for Kay Wood and for me, and were really trying to pull the agency out of the out of the dark ages that it were.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of the dark ages, I'm thinking about somebody listening to this podcast who may not have been part of that time. And they look at this 10-year span in the late 70s and 80s. In California, generally, in 78, that was the big split between the NFB and California Council of the Blind, a bitter blood rivalry, civil war of our own making. And then you mention all the things you mentioned here about Lighthouse, faltering directors, suspicion from Sacramento, misappropriation of funds, insularity, and all that. Was this a special time, especially horrible time in blindness, or bickering, quarreling, or has it always been this way?
I don't know. When I worked here, I really was not very knowledgeable, very active with either blind organization. Having said that, I did chair one of the CCB, at that time it was ACB, I think, of California, their fall convention. I chaired that. I went to an NFB convention to talk about some of the programs we were doing and Enchanted Hills, and I vowed I would never come back and do that again. I was treated terribly disrespectfully, interrupted all the time from the audience, and the director at that time did nothing to stop that.
What year was that, and what were their issues with Enchanted Hills Camp at the time?
I don't know. I think it was really a reflection of the director. I can't even remember her name now. She was in Sacramento, lived in Sacramento.
Was it Sharon Gold?
Yes. And she was mean. At least I thought she was mean. And I think her thing was she would fight whoever she thought she should fight. And then fortunately, Jim Willis came along and things got a lot better. But they were not good with Sharon Gold's time. That's for sure. But I really didn't have that much to do with it, and the organization just basically had little to do with the Lighthouse. They didn't maybe behind the scenes they did more to undermine the Lighthouse. I don't know. But I didn't pay a lot of attention to that.
You're a guy who has a lot of experience traveling around the country. You did it for AFB. You did it later for CARF. You did it earlier as well. You ran another agency we'll talk about next time in Illinois. Was California and Northern California, San Francisco, unique? Were these kinds of quarrelsome, parochial attitudes common? Did we have a special California disease? How would you place the Lighthouse and the Bay Area generally in the national scene?
I think there were two things that were going on. What I remember was the sit-ins in the Federal Building in, I think, 78 or 79, regarding the Rehab Act of 73 and amendments to that act that were never the policies were never developed until there was a sit-in and the federal building was taken over, and that was taken over by a cross-section of blind and physically disabled folks. I think the sit-ins lasted about a week.
They lasted more than a month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I went over several times, and I didn't stay overnight inside, but I knew a number of people who did. And that was, so some of what was going on were some very active physically handicapped and blind folks coming together and taking a stand. This was also at the time when the physically disabled persons were, under Ed Roberts, were beginning to exert influence and power in the state. And, and Centers for Independent Living were established, which rarely provided services to blind folks. So there was that kind of split between blindness and the blindness system and the physically disabled folks in California. That was, I think, much more pronounced, at least from what I saw, much more so than in other states. When I did go to Illinois, I saw a totally different picture there. Some of the other states as well. There was much more supportive of each other than it was out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really focused on the development of Centers for Independent Living. And Ed Roberts, being the director of the Department of Rehab, he did not have any blind folks in his cabinet, so to speak. I met with him a number of times, as did other people, Anita and others. But there was always that you knew where his loyalties lay.
Let's dig into that just a little more, because there's a generation of California youth growing up who, there's an official Ed Roberts Day, there's an official Ed Roberts curriculum in January. Many believe that disability rights started with Ed Roberts in California. And it's important to set the record straight about his relationship with the blind community, because it had a charge to it. Do you want to talk about that?
It did. And, people that cite him as an innovator and rights of people with disabilities, they're correct. He was in a nursing home, I think in Castro Valley or somewhere in that vicinity, and was not served by the Department of Rehab. Was told that, that's where you should stay. Well, he showed them. And was part of the first group of students with disabilities that stayed at Cowell Hospital as part of the university wasn't a dormitory, it was I think the hospital there was a disabled students group that lived in the hospital. And that was really the beginning of the organization, of the coming together of 10 or 12 people with disabilities that then led to the founding of the Center for Independent Living and ultimately dread of. And, you know, of course, Ed Roberts was highly regarded throughout the country and the world. He was a very charismatic person. And on the surface, you know, sure, he liked blind folks, but his commitment was for people with, particularly with spinal cord injuries. There's no question about that.
Well, this is a good time to pause. When we next take up our exploration, we're going to talk about maybe the modern era for the Lighthouse, beginning with Anita Aaron and beginning with your own education as you moved to Illinois and decided to run a statewide agency for the blind. So we'll take that up next time, and I want to thank you for your time today.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.